Now it's Sally on Sunday.
Hello. In today's programme, forgiveness. What does it mean to forgive the man who ordered the murder of your daughter? What does it mean to be forgiven?
When you face, you know, the prospect of being charged, tried and convicted, and all of a sudden the courts say we are no longer going to charge you, it created no difference in me. But as soon as Jean said, "I forgive you," it was like, you know, transferring from one world to another.
Why a former South African fighter and a grieving mother are in Scotland to talk about conciliation. The man who's just been appointed as the next Kirk moderator tells me why he has no plans for mud rolling in his ceremonial year. Okay, and some serious stuff as well. And Glasgow composer James McMillan on the faith behind his new album of religious music. But first, a song with a particular resonance across Scotland today.
When I was just a little girl, I asked my mother, "What will I be? Will I be pretty? Will I be rich?" Here's what she said to me. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be. When I grew up and fell in love, I asked my sweetheart, "What lies ahead? Will we have rainbows day after day?" Here's what my sweetheart said. Que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be. Now I have children of my own. They ask their mother, "What will I be? Will I be handsome? Will I be rich?" I tell them tenderly, que sera, sera. Whatever will be. The future's not ours to see. Que sera, sera. What will be. Que sera, sera.
Doris Day with Que Sera. But weren't we proud of the boys yesterday? Brilliant. There have been many versions of the F word, but none quite so potent as the one they've been banding around in Crieff this week. The Adventist church there is holding an exhibition about forgiveness. And along with it, they've invited two people from South Africa to tell their extraordinary stories. In 1993, Jin Fourie's daughter Lindy was killed in Cape Town in what became known as the Heidelberg Tavern Massacre. Her murder, only months before democracy was established, was ordered by Letlapa Mafaflele, who was a commander of APLA, the Azanian People's Liberation Army. I spoke to them earlier this week and began by asking Letlapa why he ordered the attack.
Just before the Heidelberg attack, there was an attack on school children in Mthatha. And as director of operation, I decided that we should go tit for tat. Hence, I authorized the attack on Heidelberg Tavern.
Did you give any thought at the time as to who the victims might be?
Well, out of rage, I did not give any thought to that.
Jin, when your daughter was murdered, what were your thoughts, your reactions at that time to those who had perpetrated this?
Shock first. And then anger, pain, sadness. And I think I epitomized it in the prayer that I prayed at her funeral, where I say, "Mary, Mother of God, our children died at the hands of evil men. I saw them as evil men."
And yet by the time of the trial of the three young men who actually carried out the murders, and that didn't include Letlapa, you sent a message to them. Now, what was that about?
That was a message of forgiveness. And that arose out of empathy for the position they were in a criminal court that had no understanding of the political implications of what they were doing. And so they were being very resistant to the law. And I could see in their faces the pain and torment of not being willing to implicate their commander. So they were saying they knew nothing about it, where the evidence was quite clear that they had done it.
And what were your feelings at that time for the commander, who was not in court?
I needed to get a hold of him, and I would happily have wrung his neck if I could. It seems so extraordinary now. But
there was no forgiveness for him at that time.
No, no. And you know what people struggle with, I find, in the F Word for exhibition, is if the person remains faceless, you don't know who it is that you can forgive. It's very difficult.
Well, eventually, Little Appa stopped being faceless because you came across him. Mm-hmm. How did that happen?
I heard an interview with him on the day that he was launching his book, Child of the Soil. And it was at the waterfront in Cape Town. So I cancelled my lectures and got myself down to the waterfront. And at the end of the press club interview, where Letlapa presented his story and told about his book, and the press gave him a really hard time. And I stood up and said who I was and that Lindy had been killed at the Heidelberg, and hadn't he trivialised the TRC by not participating?
The Truth and Reconciliation Commission.
Yeah.
Now, Letlapa, you're there, your book launch, you're fielding these tough questions from journalists, and then suddenly you're confronted by the mother of one of your victims. What was that moment like for you?
Well, it was not an easy thing, really. It was a bit unnerving.
And what happened then? You answered?
Well, I did try to answer the question that I believed and still believe that the TRC, Truth and Reconciliation Commission, trivialized the struggle, the just struggle.
Jin, you're getting this answer back. What are your feelings?
Can I just say what I heard first? I heard Letlapa say, you may think or see it that I trivialised the TRC. But didn't the TRC trivialise the fact that we were at war? And secondly, if the truth was to be told, why did people need lawyers to tell them what the truth is? That's what I heard, and it changed my whole perspective because I hadn't thought about those points. In other words, I saw Letlapa's perspective. He came straight from the podium and asked if we would meet with him as a family.
And why did you say that?
That presented a golden opportunity to restore my humanity.
And I saw when he came down from the podium, I saw the remorse in his eyes and in his body language and felt it, and it was deeply moving. So I knew I would meet with him.
So when you met properly together after the book launch, what came out of that meeting?
The next meeting we held at PAC office in Parliament, the South African Parliament in Cape Town. And as we were walking to the stairs, Jin stopped not walking and looked me in the eye and asked me whether I believed in God. A question that sounds so easy, but not so easy for me, because being an atheist, I was tempted to say I believe in God just to satisfy her. But at the same time, I thought that dishonesty may not be an ingredient that we need for a longer journey. So I told her that actually I'm an atheist, I do not believe in God. And she asked the second question, whether I believed in spirituality. Yes, I do believe in spirituality because I think that every human being does have a spiritual dimension. Then, in spite of all that, she said to me, I forgive you. It struck me like a lightning because I never thought that so soon in the journey she would give me the gift of forgiveness. a gift that was essentially not asked for. It came as a surprise to me.
Why did you feel, Jin, you wanted to forgive him at that point?
Probably because I'd already seen the remorse. And as I said to the young men who killed Lindy, when they were asked what they had felt when they were killing innocent victims, they said that they had not learned how to feel. They'd learned how to follow commands. And so I'd said to them, my high command taught me how to forgive when he hung on a rugged tree and said, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. And so that role model of forgiveness is offered to me, and I value it.
And when you received that gift, as you call it, what did that do to you?
I decided that I should reciprocate, I should return it. And the best and practical way of returning it was to invite Jin to my homecoming ceremony.
And Jin, you went along and spoke at that homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
And you announced there that you were looking for forgiveness too.
Mm-hmm.
Why?
I had really researched quite a bit about forgiveness and conciliation in South Africa for a doctorate. And what I discovered there was the shame and humiliation that were brought to black people through slavery, colonialism, and then apartheid. And so at Letlapa's homecoming ceremony, I said that I'd asked my ancestors about why we had this situation in South Africa, and they were deeply sorry for the shame and humiliation they had brought to black people, and asked forgiveness, as I also do for the systems that we brought. Every system we have in South Africa marginalizes black and poor people.
And what did you feel, Letlapa, when you heard Jin asking forgiveness really on behalf of her people for what they had done to your people?
Everybody in that audience was moved for this miracle, or something approximating miracle.
Can I ask you then, Letlapa, what the encounter then with Jin and everything that she's done and everything that you have become to each other, how that has changed you and changed your thinking about violence, about the way that people should treat each other?
Well, one thing for sure, I'm not a pacifist. I still believe that some forms of dispossession and repression cannot be answered with anything else but violence. And I can't figure out Hitler being brought to his senses except through violence. However, if I were to relive my life, I would be very cautious and very discreet as far as violence is concerned.
And Jin, nothing can change the fact that you have lost your daughter. But what has your encounter with Letlapa, as a grieving mother, has it affected the process of your grief and your loss?
Absolutely. I mean, it's changed grief and loss into privilege again. Privilege to share and to work for peace.
And because the anger that you felt?
No, I have no anger left. It dwindles away. Sadness, yes. There's always the loss. But anger is dissipated through conciliation. And conciliation for me is different from forgiveness. And I call it conciliation because we had no friendship. Reconciliation is an act of restoring a friendship. But conciliation implies that there was no friendship. In fact, the converse. We met through really hard circumstances and developed a friendship. And that's true of our groups, our white and black communities. We're not friends through apartheid.
And Letlapa, that part of you that was full of remorse and which Jin touched when she spoke to you that first time, Has there been a healing process in you then?
Surely it has been a healing process. Because when you face, you know, the prospect of being charged, tried and convicted, and all of a sudden the courts say we are no longer going to charge you, it created no difference in me. But as soon as Jean said, "I forgive you," it was like, you know, transferring from one world to another, because only the hurt, the wounded, can restore humanity to someone who has wounded or hurt them. And I think no one else, whereas, well, in the world of spirituality, people may say God can do that. But as an atheist, only Jean could have restored my humanity and no one else.
So here you are both in Scotland. What are you hoping to achieve here with this F-Word project in Crieff?
By sharing the story, I think we are challenging people to forgive. But of course, much as we share the studio with Jean and we narrate the story together, people have the inclination of thinking that we are on par, whereas that's not the case, because the forgiver and the forgiven, I don't think, are equal. To err, as you know, is human, to forgive, divine. So I think Jean has those divine characteristics, because I know a lot of people who still find it hard to forgive someone who had stolen their bicycle 10 years ago. But here is someone whose daughter was killed at my command, but still she had the courage and the power to forgive me. And it's that power of forgiveness from Jean, not from both of us, that we hope will challenge people, and those people who still find it hard to forgive someone who had stolen their cup or their pods may find it easy that someone who had lost the only daughter. She did not lose one out of five daughters. That was the only daughter she had. And hopefully the story will have the impact it deserves among the people.
Okay, well, it's been a pleasure to meet you both. Jean and Latapa, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Latapa Mapaplele and Jean Furee. And together they've set up the Lindy Furee Foundation, which you can find out more about at www.lindyfureefoundation.org.za. But if you want to catch them in person, they'll be taking part in this evening's service at Glasgow Cathedral, starting at 6:30 p.m. And the F-Word exhibition is at Crieff Adventist Church till the 20th of November. John Haldane, Professor of Philosophy at St Andrews University, joins me now. Powerful story, John?
Very much so, yes. I thought it was an inspiring example. I'm sure everybody who heard it will have felt that. But also, I was struck by the way in which it was rooted in the direct personal experience. It wasn't a sort of abstract general talk of forgiveness. It really was. At one point, I think there was some mention of how Jean, I think, said that she couldn't have forgiven while he remained faceless. It was actually had to be that sense of a real person.
And also she talked about the fact that she wanted to forgive because she saw remorse.
That's right.
And I was left wondering there whether, you know, forgiveness requires remorse.
It's a very deep question. And I think that, I mean, one could ask that as well as a psychological question. Is it possible for people to forgive those who've not sought forgiveness or have not expressed remorse? Or one could ask it as a philosophical or a theological question, if you like. Is it possible to forgive somebody even if they haven't done that? And the second is not so much a psychological question, not about what I feel able to do, it's about what the nature of forgiveness is. I think that, speaking of the Christian tradition, forgiveness is, Jean spoke about the example that came from her faith of Christ, forgive them for they know not what they do. But I think within the Christian frame, it isn't just an example, I think it's an obligation, and that one is required to forgive as a condition of one's own forgiveness, of being forgiven. And in that case, that doesn't depend upon the other person showing remorse. But if we leave behind the religious example for a moment and come back to the human world, the ordinary human world, I think psychologically it's very hard to forgive where there isn't an acknowledgement of guilt, if not, you know, an expression of remorse, exactly.
It is desperately difficult, isn't it? Because I've been talking recently for a programme we've got coming out later in this series to the Reverend Julie Nicholson, who lost her daughter in the July the 7th bombings. And she says she just can't do it. She can't forgive. And actually, until people started baying at her to do it, it never even occurred to her. But the situation there was, of course, that the person who actually murdered her daughter killed himself in the bombings,
yes.
Mohammed Siddiqui.
Yes.
So not only is the perpetrator faceless, he doesn't exist any longer.
That's right.
And where is the moral requirement there?
Indeed. And it's almost as if where one is wronged in that way, for leaving aside the question of what one gives to the perpetrator and forgiving them, it's almost as if one cannot get beyond the suffering until somehow it's been personalised, individualised. It's as with these cases that are in the news currently, where the parents of murder victims and so on are desperate for a body to be found in order they can begin to grieve. It's almost as if one can't get beyond the offence that one has suffered from, the resentment one might feel, until there is an individual upon whom one can focus one's moral efforts, and ultimately perhaps leading up to forgiveness.
But have we as a society become too needy of forgiveness by victims? I mean, it's become almost, it's a terrible thing to say of such a searing, profound thing as forgiveness. It's become almost a cliche.
Yes, I mean, I think there's two things that are worth observing here. One is the kind of therapy culture, you know, you've got to let go. And that's often put in terms of you've got to forgive yourself, you know. And I think that can be a trivialization sometimes, you know. You've got to get on, you've got to move ahead, you've got to forgive yourself. And often what's being talked about here are quite trivial matters. At the other end of things, there's sort of institutional forgiveness, where one generation, let's say, or an institution will talk about seeking forgiveness for its victims or giving forgiveness to its perpetrators. And I think, again, there's a danger of that trivializing. What I think this case that we've been listening to this morning brings out is the way in which this exploration and understanding of forgiveness is rooted in personal experience.
Because actually Jin's forgiveness or her request to be forgiven by Little Appa was actually of the institutional kind, wasn't it? She wasn't personally responsible, although she had thoughtlessly been caught up in a party. She
yes.
wasn't personally responsible for any of its horrors.
I have to say, I found that part where she was speaking that way the least impressive in a way, because it did sound as if, well, now I have to see if there's something that I can seek forgiveness for. And I'm sure she was sincere in a way, but I thought the really powerful part was the direct engagement of one who suffered dealing with the perpetrator and finding it possible, and indeed for herself finding it necessary to engage in some kind of moral relationship, which in this case took the form of forgiveness, which of course elicited from him feelings that he might not otherwise have had.
Well, thanks very much for that, John. If you've got any views on forgiveness at home or anything else in the programme, do drop me an email at sallyonsunday@bbc.co.uk or text 80295. And do stay with me, John, for the rest of the hour in case anything else comes up.